I always like the criminal law. I don't know why, but it just seems very interesting to me. And so when you combine the two, you find yourself a human rights activist. So I didn't join it because I particularly like Boris Nemtsov. I joined it because I wanted to do something
When you
political.
go into work on Russia Today, whatever you say your motives are, you're working for a person who's constantly lying about everything.
Howdy, folks. Welcome to another episode of The Russia Guy. I'm your host, Kevin Rothrock. And this is the podcast where I talk to movers and shakers in Russia-focused journalism, academia, activism. On this show, I find out how people in this field came to do what they do, what makes them tick, what it's like to spend a day in their shoes, or slippers, if you're indoors. God knows, Russians love throwing tapochki at you the moment you step inside. Anyway, today's show takes a look at the lighthearted, always uplifting world of human rights in Russia.
We have a word for this in Russian. In English, that would sound like human rights defender or so. Правозащитник is what I'm talking about.
That's Polina Nemirovskaya, a project coordinator at Open Russia, a movement founded by former oil tycoon turned anti-Putin dissident Mikhail Khodorkovsky. Polina sat down with me, virtually, over Skype, and told me how she got involved in human rights advocacy, saying it all started with an interest in politics.
I was very much into politics at first when I like started to be an activist. I went to several political campaigns and so on, but I don't believe so much in politicians. So they generally just, most of the people I worked with on political campaigns in the end disappointed me somehow. And when you're doing human rights work, it's actually like harder to be disappointed because there are people who are actually sitting in prison and they really need your help. And so that satisfies me, I think, more than just political work.
Politically, like, where do you fall ideologically? Like, do you have strong held political beliefs, or are there strong central core ideas to what you think politically, or you're kind of still looking for, I don't know, how would you describe it?
When I was a bit younger, I was really like identifying myself as a very, very left activist. And I was growing less left with time as I start to work, actually, and to manage.
Are you a libertarian now?
No, not libertarian. But I would like in America, I would be just totally a Liberal Party supporter. I think.
A Democrat, you mean?
A Democrat, yes. I think the government should try to provide people with a sufficient level of health care and education and so on, but I don't support economical plans like we had in Soviet Union.
Okay, gotcha. Later in life, do you think you'll ever return to politics? Maybe as a politician yourself? Like, do you see yourself as somebody who might seek office one day, you know, in what's Navalny's term for the future? What does he say? Like the Velikaya budushaya, what's his term?
Prekrasnaya.
That's right. Yes. Prekrasnaya. Do you think in that Russia, should it ever arrive, that might be a country where you could see yourself running for office one day, or have you lost the taste for it?
I think if I will succeed at work, and if I will prove, at least to myself, that I'm worthy of people's trust, then why not? Because it's just many people on different stages in my life suggested that I should run for something like municipal deputy or some other elections that were in St. Petersburg and Moscow, but I just didn't feel that I was ready for it. I think if I want to sit in the office, maybe I should first prove myself of being capable to actually do things and find a proper word for my political beliefs at first.
Polina says she was brought up by politically conscious grandparents, describing the liberal radio station Echo of Moscow as her television and cartoons. In college, she started studying criminal law, which she says naturally complemented her existing interest in politics. Then it was just a matter of time before she found herself at political protests.
I'm not even talking high school, because it just happened when I moved in with my grandparents when I was five, and my grandfather...
Five? At five? You start getting interested in politics? Is that what you mean?
Yeah,
or
I moved in with my grandparents when I was five. And so my grandfather always listened to this liberal radio station, Echo of Moscow, like in the morning and in the evening and so on. And it was just like my television and my cartoons, listening about all the politicians and parties and Putin and so on. And I remember, like, I was starting to get really political when I was like 13. I remember we had this another gas scandal with Ukraine when Russia wanted to not give Ukraine any more gas. And that was when I wrote my first political article. It was on my...
At the age of 13?
It was on my Vkontakte page. But the discussion in comments between all of my 13-year-old friends lasted for like a year, literally.
Is that still online or have you removed it?
I think I've hidden it from the public. It is still there with all the comments. And so I was like always interested in politics and in like in the social life. I was always thinking about what will I do if I ever become a president or so on. But also, I always liked the criminal law. I don't know why, but it just seems very interesting to me. And so when you combine the two, you find yourself a human rights activist. Like criminal law, I went to study law in university, and criminal law was my like favorite subject, and everybody hated me when we had the criminal law seminars because we would just sit down with our professor and talk between the two of us.
I see. Yeah.
And so yes, that's how I end up here.
And so you have this interest in politics, and you have this interest in criminal law,
which are very closely tied in Russia.
Sure. Yes. Well, you know, maybe in the United States too. How does that then, like, do you remember the first protest you ever attended or the first?
I do.
Okay, what was it?
I remember also the first protest I wanted to attend, but I was 14, so I thought that it was too early for me. It was when we have this cartoon TV channel.
Dvazhda Dva,
yes. And when the government wanted to shut it down and place it with the Orthodox Christianity channel.
So this is the channel that carries like Adult Swim and Futurama and Simpsons and like those kind of like late night American shows, right?
Yeah, so the government wanted to replace it with a SPAS TV channel, an Orthodox one. And there were rallies and like all of our class wanted to go there. But we read that if underage children come, then the organizers will have problems. And we were very thoughtful and decided not to make trouble for anyone. So you did not
go to that one?
No.
But you wanted to.
And the first one was many people in Russian opposition was when protests of 2011 started. So I didn't go anywhere in 2011, but I since 2012 emerged like a month later. I went in 2012. That was March, I think. And I took my friend I was in 11th grade and she was in 10th. And it was like an illegal demonstration in St. Petersburg near the metro station Gostiny Dvor. And we were running from the police and they were trying to catch us. It was very interesting.
Did they catch you or no?
No. In the end, we turned up hiding in some shop.
After the protests of Russia's winter of discontent, or whatever flowery name you'd like to give the 2011-2012 demonstrations, Polina took a short break from activism before joining Boris Nemtsov's regional Duma campaign in Yaroslavl, a race he won, giving Polina a taste of political victory that Russia's opposition rarely enjoys these days.
So after those protests in 2012, I was just supporting the opposition for like a year. And afterwards in 2014, I went on my first political campaign, which was a campaign for Boris Nemtsov in Yaroslavl. We actually made him win, surprisingly.
What was your role in the campaign?
Oh, I was just helping to organize the meetings with people in the yards. So it was just what was like very technical work. I would just call people in their homes and say that, "Hey, Boris Nemtsov comes to your yard this evening."
Did you meet Nemtsov at all? Did you speak to him or?
Yes, yeah,
Yeah.
of course.
Okay.
We didn't have a very large campaign at the time, so everybody
I
was
see.
like all together.
And you won. That was a successful campaign. Did that experience, was that kind of inspiring? I know what's happened since with Nemtsov especially is very far from inspiring, but was that an inspiring moment? Can you kind of walk me through what that felt like?
It actually was an extremely inspiring moment because, well, I have to admit that I didn't have much trust or respect for Boris Nemtsov when I joined the campaign. So I didn't join it because I particularly like Boris Nemtsov. I joined it because I wanted to do something political and opposition, of course. And so I joined in and I was like skeptical about his figure. But then when I get to know him, he turned out to be like this great guy everybody's now talking about. And in the end, we even won. And I think that was really not very good for me as a realistic person because my first political experience in Russia was a winning one. And for some reason, I started thinking that it's actually possible to
And
win.
what did you do after the Nemtsov campaign?
I actually joined this party, the Parnas Party, but then I moved to Moscow and I left this party shortly afterwards. And I was just working on some boring jobs which were not connected to politics, having like my youth and so on. But then in 2015, I joined Open Russia finally. Immediately, I mean, immediately in a human rights project.
And now Polina is with the Open Russia movement. The group was founded by Hodorkovsky, but what is Open Russia? What is it and what does it do?
So there was this man, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who was the richest man in Russia once, and then he opposed Putin and went to prison in the year 2003. He spent 10 years in prison, and then he went out of prison before Sochi Olympic Games, and he decided to revive his civic organization, which was Open Russia. So now Open Russia is not one project, but it's like an umbrella organization for a lot of different projects. We have our media outlets, and we have a civic movement, which is political, and we have a human rights project where I work in. We help political prisoners to leave prisons. And also, we're trying now to start helping people who are not currently in prison, but with their like more civic problems, so with fighting the governmental monopolies and just when the government is not respecting their rights, we're trying to provide the law support for making things right.
And so when you say you provide assistance to political prisoners, what's the process for, well, for one, like how do you identify who's a political prisoner and who's somebody else, right? Like the regular prisoner, I guess. And then once you've identified these people, how do you actually give them help? Somebody has to call them or email them or, you know, I don't know how you get in touch with somebody who's incarcerated in Russia, but like how do you actually get in touch with these people, and then what's the negotiation in terms of helping them? Because, you know, you can't just say, I've hired a lawyer for you, right? They have to like agree to it, and there's some kind of conversation, I guess. And how does that actually work?
So we generally try to focus on the cases in which concern a right to freedom of speech and the right freedom of assembly.
Are
So,
you following the news to find out where those cases are, or
well, of course we
yeah.
do.
Like that's how you find out about the cases, is like Mediazona writes about it or something, and then you look.
Sometimes that's how, and sometimes people just write to
I
us
see.
because they already know we exist. And so, and the freedom of assembly is like a separate thing because someone's right to freedom of assembly usually is violated when there are like Navalny's rallies. And as you know, after a lot of Navalny's rallies. There are criminal cases against people who allegedly attacked a cop and disobeyed them. If we find out a case, so if we're not talking about a situation when, like, a future prisoner just writes to us first.
Right, that would be an interesting message to get, is I'm going to be arrested next week. I'm going to become a political prisoner.
Well, actually, you get some signs in advance, like when, if you're called to police.
Right. Yeah,
you probably understand that something bad is about to happen. But if not, we just have to actually either send a lawyer to a prison or ask some people from civic observant committee.
Right, the like public monitoring, the people that have access to the prisoners.
Yeah, we ask if there are friendly people in the region that interested us.
Are they government employees, or what's their? Because I always read about these people in news stories, and I wonder to myself, are these activists, or do they work for the state, or who are these people? Because this like
I don't think they have salary. I don't think they have salary, but it's a group of people who are elected for some rather weird process. So they're not elected by the people. They're elected by the government. And the government lets them visit the prisons and visit some other places like police stations and so on. Or we contact the relatives of a person if we can't find them.
One of Polina's former colleagues, Masha Baronova, recently took a managing editor position at the state media outlet Russia Today, joining what Masha says is a charity project that will also address human rights concerns inside Russia. I prodded Polina on this question to get a sense of what she thinks about collaborating with the regime for ostensibly noble aims. Do you think that it's possible to achieve anything in human rights advocacy in Russia through the state? For instance, do you think you could do anything for human rights in Russia by working for an organization like, say, Russia Today?
No, I don't.
So does that mean that in order to be a true human rights activist in Russia, you have to be an anti-Kremlin oppositionist? Is it that cut and dry?
No, of course not. Like, there is this... How does it translate? Presidential Human Rights Committee, which finds a lot of cases and tries to bring some justice to these cases and so on. And in some particular cases, they really manage to help people. And people do get out of prison with their help. But we have to understand and bear in mind that if we didn't have this particular president... then probably most of these people weren't in prison in the first place. And I'm not talking about political prisoners only. It's just that the most of injustice in Russia grows from the system which is controlled by Putin. And so working for Putin in one or another form and also trying to fight the consequences of his rule is rather weird process for me. Of course, if you are in a position of power, you can do more things, but you cannot change the system. And that's what we are aiming at.
I mean, I don't want to get into just what do you think of different individuals, but I mean, like, at least in my recent memory, the sort of scandals that I've seen in the last few months, you have, this isn't necessarily human rights activism, but like Oleg Kashin is, you know, gone on Первый канал and he's on this talk show that everybody hates. And that's a big scandal. And if I'm not mistaken, Katya Vinokurova is like now in the civic chamber, I think. And Masha Baronova, your former colleague, is now at RT. And do you think these people are doing any good? Because the missions that they have are, I mean, maybe Kashin's mission isn't so great. He just wants to have his name more places. But but at least Vinokurova and Baronova, they think that they're working within the system for positive change, right? Is that just impossible, or are they being naive? Or you say that Open Russia's goal is systemic change. It's really a big idea. And it I think it's reasonable, of course, or it's just logical to assume that you cannot overthrow the system by working for RT. I mean, but they don't really claim that they're doing that, right? They think that they're doing a little good. Do you think that that's possible, or is allowing yourself to be co-opted by something like the Civic Chamber or something like Russia Today did the costs sort of outweigh the benefits? Because this is obviously a judgment call that a lot of people in Russia have to make, because not only does being in the opposition generally mean struggling in terms of money, right? Because it's just hard to survive, especially with all the foreign agent stuff making it difficult to get money from outside and so on and so forth. Do you think people are, do you look at that and you say they're being naive, or do you look at that and say they've sold out? I mean, what's your takeaway when you, because it's not an isolated occurrence. It seems like it happens regularly.
I would try to restrain from like personal comments, because I just don't want to be a part of any scandal at the moment. But I don't think that working for government may be naive, especially when we've had like 19 years of full of opportunities to see what this government is capable of. Like when you go into work on Russia Today, whatever you say your motives are, you're working for a person who's constantly lying about everything. But, and I mean Margarita Simonyan by that. You're working for a person whose job is to spread lies. You're working for a person who's good friends with Ramzan Kadyrov, whose people murdered Boris Nemtsov. And I don't know how you can be, how we can, you know, believe that someone who goes to work in Russia Today is naive. That's not what naivety is. Of course, there will be some particular people which will get help from that. Of course, they will be. But if we are talking about that as some sort of a moral choice, I wouldn't say that we could justificate that somehow morally.
All right, so enough about Baronova and RT. Open Russia confronts human rights abuses. So what are the biggest human rights problems in Russia, at least outside the North Caucasus, where there are proper atrocities underway? Polina says we have to look at Russia's police and the Federal Security Service.
Well, of course, the FSB torture that started happening last year or so, because we didn't...
Did it start happening, or did people just notice it then?
We didn't hear so much about tortures by FSB, about political tortures and so on. We just didn't get so much information. I wouldn't say that it never happened, but it wasn't like a regular thing. So now new people get tortured every month or so.
Do you have any sense of why it's seemingly on the rise? Is that a centralized thing, or because it's not isolated to an area? It seems like it's happening all over the country.
I don't want to be too dramatic, but maybe it's just because I've been in this activism area for quite a long time. But I really started getting the sense of just everything in Russia starts to break down slowly. So we know last year we had so many cases which would be like a black swan for any government anywhere in the world. And we have this happening like every week and nothing changes. But this is all, I think, really connected. The FSB tortures, the murder of politicians in the streets came out of a situation where people were just burning alive in a shopping mall. It is all part of one process. And this is like a decay, a very slow decay, and a result of the last 19 years of Putin's rule. We don't know yet what will come after, but it doesn't look to me as if this is some normal political process, or this is just something that can be explained with the game of Kremlin thrones. It's just lack of control.
Open Russia, incidentally, has run into some problems with the authorities recently, some of whom believe it is the local branch of another past Hodorkovsky organization registered in Britain with the same name, which the Justice Ministry has outlawed. I asked Polina how recent laws against foreign agents and so-called undesirable organizations have complicated the work of human rights advocates in Russia. I imagine this has affected your work considerably. One of the methods of control that the government has implemented in the last few years is this legislation against foreign agents. And I'm curious, how does that affect the work of human rights activists? Like, do you find that that has crippled the field, or have people found a way around it? Or like, how, as someone on the inside of this, how would you kind of weigh its impact?
We're not a foreign agent, by the way.
Right. But I mean, like, the Levada Center has gotten in trouble for this too, and they're not, you know, they're not even human rights activists, but their work, I suppose, is probably, it has political significance, right? And so I'm curious, you know, you work with human rights activists, is the foreign agents law something that is talked about a lot because it's a threat, or is it something that everybody laughs at, or what's the kind of word on the street?
You know, being a foreign agent is like, it's not the worst thing that could happen for human rights organizations. I'll tell you why, because when you're a foreign agent, it doesn't mean that you're forbidden from continuing to work. It means that you have to publicly state that you're a foreign agent on your website and all of your materials, which you produce, and you have to do some extra documentation about that. But it doesn't forbid you from continuing to work. So the foreign agents thing mostly affects the social organizations, those organizations who are not political, but who are aiming to somehow address some social problems. By that I mean, for example, you know, there was a case when in Saratov, there was an organization which helped people with HIV, and they received some money from, if I remember correctly, Procter & Gamble and so on, and they were renounced foreign agents for that. And this really harms their work, because people who have HIV are not also political. And when they see someone as a foreign agent, it just harms their reputation. And so people just don't go there, and people don't use their services, and that harms them. If, for example, some human rights organization that constantly helps, tries to help political prisoners and constantly says that Putin is an enemy of all the people and so on, is pronounced foreign agent, nobody is surprised. And its reputation is not harmed very much, because it was already an opposition organization.
And then Open Russia has had issues with the undesirable organization law. I know that the dispute there is that the actual group that was banned and outlawed is the British registered organization, and then Открытая Россия says it's a movement. I guess it's a legal issue, but like, what's the difference between a движение, a movement, and like a more formal organization?
So we should, I think, first start with saying what this undesirable organization is. So the foreign agent is a Russian organization that is fully or partly funded from abroad, from the outside. An undesirable organization is branch of a foreign organization in Russia. So there is a foreign organization somewhere outside of Russia, and it has a branch in Russia, and that branch and organization are considered undesirable. And so what happened with Open Russia is this. There was an entity in the United Kingdom, which was called Otkritaya Russia. It wasn't connected to the Open Russia civic movement.
But it is connected to Khodorkovsky, right?
It is, yeah. It no longer exists, by the way. But it existed at the time. And so it did something in United Kingdom, which we don't know what it did.
Okay.
And in Russia, there is this Open Russia civic movement, which is not a legal entity at all, which isn't registered anywhere, because there is a law in Russia which concerns the movements and the unions of the people. And this law states that if people are united to achieve some goal, it's not necessary that they register in the Ministry of Justice. So Open Russia civic movement didn't register itself according to the law. And Открытая Россия was present in the United Kingdom. There were no particular links between the two of them. But then the Russian prosecutors, general prosecutor's office, said, hey, we noticed that you're called the same. Why don't we put you on the list? And then The consequences of undesirability is that people might get under administrative or criminal prosecution for just participating in activities of the undesirable organization. And so they've put on the list this criteria, which was in Britain. And then what's very interesting, the general prosecutor spokesperson said that they don't have any questions to Russian movement and they don't think it is connected. And then the same thing was repeated by the Ministry of Justice. But shortly after, like 3 months after that, there was a first administrative case against a member of Open Russia movement in Russia for participating in undesirable organization. And we had like 50 or so people who were prosecuted, who were given some fines for that. And analyzing these cases is really very funny because there is just literally no evidence about the connection between the two organizations. So what prosecutor's office does is it just takes a photo of an activist who's standing with like a flag that says Open Russia and says, hey, Open Russia, and here, Open Russia, let's say you're connected. And in some cases, they even took Wikipedia screenshots as the evidence, which is like completely weird thing to do because, I don't know, I can log in on like Wikipedia and write the general prosecutor's office is undesirable.
Maybe next time you should, in advance of a rally, you should edit the Open Russia Wikipedia page to say, this is a branch of the Russian Justice Ministry.
Yes, and this January, there was a first criminal case against our activists for participating in the undesirable organization. That was a sad case of Anastasia Shevchenko, who is accused of several episodes of participating in our undesirability, which were coordinating the debates which were with a member of United Russia Party, a ruling party in Russia, also holding a lecture and some other things like that. She was also participating in a rally in defense of some girls that were convicted, and there was some other terrible deed that she's done. I don't remember it right now.
And she's under house arrest now?
She's under house arrest.
And how many years in prison would she face if she's convicted?
Up to 6.
Wow.
And I think we should tell listeners what happened to...
Sure.
What happened afterwards.
Yeah, no, it's a tragedy.
It really is, because she was placed under house arrest. And Nastya, she had 3 children, one of which was ill from birth. So she had some congenital disease, I think. So she was in a special facility. And Nastya would often come to her like twice or 3 times a month with her other children, and she would be there for her if she needed something. And so because we were defending Nastya, we asked the court 2 times to let Nastya see her daughter and come to her to the facility because she needed extra care. And the court denied it both times, and then 4 days later, Nastya's daughter just died because she had a bronchitis, yeah, and she didn't receive the help she needed on time.
And she was allowed to come to her deathbed at the very end, but is that right? Or was she not allowed to see her at all?
Yeah, so Nastya was questioned by the investigators when it all started happening. And so our lawyers asked that she would be released to the facility, and investigators were rather quick to give permission. But then she went to the hospital, and doctors weren't letting her into the, what do you call it, reanimatsiya, intensive care. And so she visited her daughter Alina for like 5 minutes in the morning, and she was already in a coma. So.
Oh my gosh, I see. Okay. And now she's still under house arrest. She now has 2 children.
Yes.
And she's awaiting trial.
She is.
Yeah. And there were protests afterwards, were there not? There was like the Mother's March or something along those lines. Mother's Anger.
Mother's Anger March, right.
And do you know when is her trial resume?
It's now on the investigation part. So it might take a few more months investigating just what actually she say at those lectures that she was holding. and after they will be true.
Yeah, they'll have linguistic expertise or whatever they do.
Yeah, it's really funny. I was just trying to remember how it was in the documents, because about the lectures, they said that she was lecturing the activists about the necessity of intruding into civic groups with an excuse of offering free legal help. Something like that. So it really just sounds like something from the year 1937.
And finally, I gave Polina a chance to answer the question I ask almost all my guests. What should a dumb, stupid Westerner like me understand better about Russia? Given the chance to slap me upside my head, what would Polina say to set the record straight?
The most important thing for Americans to understand is that we hate Putin as much as you do, and even more. I'm always very sad when, you know, when someone on the TV or someone writes an article about, like, Trump ties to Putin and so on, and they're addressing Putin as Russians. So they say, Russia is a threat, or Russians funded Trump. We didn't. I mean, we did, because that was money stolen from our taxes and so on, but we didn't want to do that, obviously. And so I just don't want people to equate Russia and Putin.
That's my interview with human rights activist Polina Nemirovskaya, a project coordinator at the Open Russia Movement. In the description of this podcast episode, you'll find hyperlinks to Polina's Twitter feed and her Open Russia project. If you enjoyed this interview, consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/KevinRothrock, where you can contribute as much or as little as you like to help with production costs. I'm also always happy to hear from listeners directly on Twitter, where my DMs are open to everybody. As always, thanks for listening. Until next time.
Говорят мы пяки-буки, как выносит нас земля. Дайте, что ли, карты в руки, погадать на короля.
Ой-ля-ля, ой-ля-ля, погадай на короля. Ой-ля-ля, ой-ля-ля, эх-па!
Завтра дальняя дорога, выпадают королю. У него деньжонок много, а я денежки люблю.
Ой-ой-ой!